Members, I will now call the Post-Secondary Education and Workforce Subcommittee to order. Kendall, would you please call the roll?
Chair Mello.
Here.
Vice Chair Beltran.
Here.
Ranking Member Tan.
Here.
Representative Amnesty.
Here.
Representative Bell.
Here.
Representative Burfield. Representative Cross.
Here.
Representative Dunkley.
Here.
Representative Escamani. Representative Esposito.
Here.
Representative Gonzalez-Pittman.
Present.
Representative Hawkins.
Here.
Representative Hinson.
Here.
Representative Lopez is excused. Representative Plasencia.
Here.
Representative Redman.
Here.
Representative Schoaf.
Here.
Representative Temple.
Here.
Thank you, members, and by your presence, we have a quorum. Members, I ask that you please silence all cell phones. If there are any members of the public that wish to speak or provide testimony to the subcommittee today, please fill out an appearance card. Members, we have four bills on the agenda today. I hope everybody's ready. We will now take up HB 931 relating to post-secondary education, educational institutions. Representative Roach, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Chair Mello, Vice Chair Beltran, Ranking Member Tant. Good afternoon and happy opening day. House Bill 931 is a bill that seeks to continue Florida's efforts to cultivate a campus culture that embraces and encourages intellectual freedom and viewpoint diversity, with the ultimate goal of graduating students with not only educational credentials, but also as an educated and informed citizen of this great state and this republic. There are four constituent parts to this bill. I'm going to explain each of the four parts briefly, and then we'll take some questions through the chair, of course. Section 1 amends Florida statutes in regards to the intellectual freedom and viewpoint diversity assessment. That section begins on page 2 of the bill at line 47. Some of you have been serving in this chamber. Remember, in 2021, the legislature passed a bill requiring an individual freedom and viewpoint diversity survey to be administered by all Florida college system and state university system institutions. When we passed that legislation, we required them to conduct this survey annually and directed them to compile and publish the results beginning in September of 2022, which they did. Part one of this bill simply changes the annual reporting requirements so that the survey results must now be reported by December 31 of each year rather than September. That's part one of the bill. Part two of the bill creates a new statute, section 1001.93, to establish the Office of Public Policy Events within the state university system. This part of the bill starts on page 4 at line 82, and this part requires the Board of Governors to create, as I mentioned, an Office of Public Policy Events with satellite offices at each university. The purpose of this new office is to facilitate the advancement of knowledge and civic engagement through events featuring open discussion and debate on the issues of the day with the presentation of diverse perspectives. Part three of the bill begins at the bottom of page 7 at line 174, and it prohibits political loyalty tests in hiring and admissions at our state institutions. The fourth and final section of this bill begins on lines 218 on page 9 and serves to extend due process protections to the 12 university student body presidents that serve in the Florida Student Association. If you may recall, the bill I spoke of in 2021 provided due process protections to members of student government, but it did not extend those to the FSA. So this simply seeks to correct that omission by requiring the FSA to adopt bylaws that put in those due process protections that members of student government enjoy. That is the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Roach. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Okay, Representative Hinson, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and as I'm trying to gather my understanding of the bill, could you please tell me, Rep. Roach, how do college campuses do this now?
You are recognized.
I'm assuming you're talking about the Office of Public Policy. Is that what we're referring to?
I thought you were creating an Office of Public Policy. What I'm asking is for speakers and different events that you're talking about going through this new office, how are they done now?
Representative Roach, You're recognized.
Yes. I don't know how they're done now. I suspect that each institution has their own way of doing this. But what they're not doing and what the bill seeks to address is to bring in speakers of diverse perspectives to promote a culture of viewpoint diversity and intellectual freedom on campus.
Representative Henson, follow-up?
Yes. With some knowledge of college campus, currently I believe student governments and student activities are allowed to bring in speakers of diverse points of view. Why do we need to change that?
Well, I would posit that they're certainly allowed to, but that's not happening to the extent that I think it should happen.
Representative Henson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your indulgence. I'm trying to understand where or why do you feel this way? Has something occurred that we don't know about that you can share with us?
Representative Roach, you're recognized.
Yeah, so pardon the long answer here, but how much time do you got? So I think what this bill is trying to do, and in answer to your question, is you know, we have a long history in Florida of our commitment to viewpoint diversity. And when you look back at 2015, if you've never heard of the Chicago Statement, you should check that out. It's on page 2 of the staff analysis. But the Chicago Statement of 2015 is a really nationally famous statement. And all 12 of Florida university presidents signed a resolution to support the Chicago Statement in April of 2019, as well as the chancellor at the time, to commit to this principle of intellectual freedom and diversity of viewpoint on college campuses. But in 2023, just this last year, these results were compiled this last year, FIRE, one of the institutions that I look at, it's Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, they evaluated 11 Florida State universities and found that only 4 had policies that did not inhibit free expression. That's on page 3 of your staff analysis. And then going back a little bit further, which this was the genesis of the 2021 bill that I mentioned, the National Survey of Student Engagement, which I've spoken about before in 2017, found that 71% of students felt that their institution generally demonstrated a commitment to diversity, which is good. That's a good result. But as that diversity relates to race, gender, religious affiliation, or disability status, but when the survey was extended to ask about diversity of political affiliation, that number dropped to 50%. That's bad. And then Florida passed the Campus Free Expression Act in 2018, which designated that all outdoor areas of campus are traditional public forums, meaning that you cannot create an exclusive free speech zone and dedicate the rest of the campus to an area of self-censorship. Rather, the entire campus should be a free speech zone. And then in 2021, as I mentioned before, we did the Viewpoint Diversity Bill, which included the survey, included an anti-shielding provision to ensure that university administration faculty were not shielding students from views that they felt were controversial. It had a provision in the bill allowing the recording of classroom lectures by students, and it had those due process protections for members of student government. So that is the law now. This bill seeks to build on that. And I think all of what has gone before is a continued effort to address what I see as a monoculture on college campuses.
Thank you, Representative Roach. Representative Escamani, followed by Representative Cross.
Thanks so much, Madam Chair. So I'm going to go through line by line with the bill because I have questions about several parts of the bill, Representative Roach. So first off, why are you extending the deadline of the survey tool that no one used?
Representative Roach, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, you know, in the year or so since we passed this bill, you know, as many of you have, I've attended a number of conferences, Excel and Ed, other ones. I've talked to some statisticians that I also spoke to when we developed the bill. And as you mentioned, Representative Escamani, we did have a very low participation rate in the survey, and I hope to change that. And one of the things I learned from talking to statisticians who I asked, hey, why do you think, or what could we do to sort of maybe foster more participation in the survey, is they pointed out to me that, hey, your September deadline every year is sort of counterproductive, because if the first semester starts in August, like, and especially for incoming students, if their first time on a university campus, they're freshmen, they really haven't had a chance in just that month to experience student culture or even form an opinion or have any positive or adverse experiences. And they said you should require the survey to be completed at the end of that first semester, at the end of December, when they have had a chance to go through an entire semester on campus. And I thought that was just common sense, and I regret that I missed it the first time, but this is simply an attempt to change the survey date with the hope of capturing more participation, which you did identify as a problem.
Thank you, Representative Roach.
Thank you so much. Why 2024, not 2023?
Representative Roach, you're recognized.
Thank you. I did have it originally as 2023, but when I talked to my university folks, they said, hey, that's not really enough time for us to develop. If we want to develop another survey based on what we saw, maybe some shortcomings of the ones before, and I wanted to give them plenty of time to put that into place and make that change.
Representative Escamani, follow up.
Thank you. Shifting gears to lines 8 to 12, how would you define substantial number? What does substantial mean?
Give me 1 second and let me pull up that part of the bill. What lines? Sorry, Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I have it as lines 8 to 12, organize, publicize, and stage a substantial number of debates, group forums, and individual lectures at each state university, et cetera, et cetera. So what does substantial mean?
Representative
Escamani, are you referring to line 108?
Yes.
Thank you.
That may help you, Representative Roach.
Thank you. Chair.
You are recognized.
Yeah, I will acknowledge that that is a somewhat of a vague number. Have not attached an actual numerical, you know, benchmark on that. So I think that there's some room for interpretation there.
Okay. Chair, follow up?
Yes, you are recognized.
Thank you. Just going a few more lines down. Such debates, group forums, and lectures must include speakers who represent widely held views. How do you define widely held views? Who determines that?
Representative Escamani, would you please refer to the line number?
Yes, that is line 114.
Representative Roach, you're recognized.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Escamani. You know, look, going back a little bit to Rep. Henson's first question, you know, look, I think that there's still going to be a lot of room in this bill for not only student government, but student faculty and student administrators to sort of determine some of this for themselves, right? There's some ambiguity in the language, but I would think that, and I would hope that widely held views would result in diverse perspectives on the issues of the day. That's my goal.
Representative Escamani, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. So some people have a view of anti-Semitism. Are we forcing universities to identify someone who is an anti-Semite to speak to a college campus and based on your bill to publicly fund them to do that? Is that a correct interpretation of what widely held views would lead to, is that we invite Nazis to our campus?
Representative Roach, you're recognized.
Thank you. I'll attempt to answer that. So first of all, I would dispute the fact that Nazism represents a broad swath of the American public or that that's a widely held view or sort of dominant political theory in the United States. I would instead posit that that's a extremist view held by a very slim minority of Americans, if it's even statistically measurable. And in regards to the funding, you know, many times when campuses invite controversial speakers, they require the speaker to pay for their own security, to pay for their own transport, their own housing. I don't know to what extent the university would be funding a speaker that was invited by a campus group to campus. But you know what this is seeking to do is prohibit sort of university censorship or self-censorship. And look, I would go back to, you know, United States versus Swimmer. And I'm no Nazi. I'm no fan of Nazism. But Justice Holmes wrote that there's any principle of free thought. It should be free thought, not necessarily for those who agree with this, but freedom for the thought that we hate. And the best way, you know, the best way to expose a fool, right, is to hire a hall and let him discourse on his or her views. So no, this is not a bill to promote Nazism on campuses, and I would again go back to my first statement that I really dispute that this is a widely held sort of political view or dominant viewpoint in the United States or on our college campuses at all.
Representative Escamani, how many more questions? One more?
Yeah.
You're recognized. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairwoman. I want to be respectful of my colleagues. So your bill explicitly says, if you go to lines 120-123, that the office shall invite a speaker who is able to represent such perspective. The office shall, when necessary, provide such speakers who are not from within the state university community with per diem and a reimbursement for travel expenses. So I understand your point that in the past, controversial speakers would have to pay their own way, but many of the widely held topics, since that's not defined, could be determined by people who are extreme. And so with that, how can you say that controversial speakers want to be publicly funded when your bill explicitly requires that they be publicly funded for the intent of your legislation?
Representative Roach, you're recognized.
Yeah, so the first part of that provision says, if the office is unable to readily find an advocate from within the state university community. And so we put that in there, or I put that in there as sort of a catch-all to prohibit a campus from simply falling back on saying, oh, well, no one on our faculty wants to speak on this issue, so therefore we just won't have this viewpoint represented. We'll have, you know, both speakers that agree on substantially everything. I think it would be difficult at one of our premier universities in the state of Florida for the faculty not to find an advocate from within the state university community. It doesn't even have to be a faculty member, just within the broader community there, that could speak on a variety of topics. And if they can't, look, they would have the option to bring someone in and fund them. And we're specifically telling them that they can do that.
Thank you. Representative Cross, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question is kind of a follow-up to Rep. Escamani's final one. This is, again, starting on line 118. It does show in the staff analysis that there's an indeterminate fiscal on here, but I was wondering if there would be a potential cap on what a state university could pay for per diem and travel, particularly if someone was from out of country.
Representative Roach, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. No, I did not envision a cap, and I think the universities can probably determine that for themselves.
Follow-up, you're recognized.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. Moving to a different section on line 176, and this is related to the political loyalty test, and was wondering if you could just share an example of a state-funded college or university that does have such a policy in place.
You're recognized, Representative
yes.
Roach.
Yeah, so I think the majority of our universities in Florida, probably 100% of them, have some kind of required test, which I would consider, you know, compelled speech, that would require solicit a person to identify or make a commitment to or a statement of personal belief in support of these DEI sort of mission statements, diversity, equity, inclusion. And this is even extended into our sort of STEM facilities and medical schools as well. I have some literature on that I can send to you. I don't have a list of all those right in front of me now, but I do have some concrete examples from Florida institutions that are doing this.
Follow-up, you are recognized, Representative Cross.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in line 176, it's specifically related to a political loyalty test, not one related to DEI. Do you know of any state college or universities that have a requirement for a political loyalty test?
You're recognized, Representative Roach.
Yeah, I think what you're alluding to is, do you have to pledge your allegiance to a party? And I did not spell that out intentionally, because I think you can require a political litmus test or loyalty test without pledging that you're a Republican or Democrat. I mean, we're talking about pledging sort of your fealty to a set of beliefs. I don't think any university would be that overt to pledge allegiance to a particular party. But I think that the method that they're doing that is a bit more insidious when they are asking people to pledge their fealty to a set of ideas, which are political beliefs, but maybe not a political party affiliation.
Representative Cross, did you have another question? Okay, thank you. Representative Tant, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Roach, what is the problem we're trying to cure with the Florida Student Associations? What are your concerns with that?
Representative Roach, you are recognized.
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, look, I think the problem is that we have a monoculture, an intellectual monoculture in our institutions of higher learning. I think that Florida colleges and universities lack intellectual diversity. I think they're I think that this problem can be addressed in a way that respects academic freedom. That's what I'm attempting to do here. And the solution that I'm trying to find is, you know, our state and I think our nation writ large is threatened by political polarization. And I think a way to help restore civil discourse is not to shield students from viewpoints that they find offensive, but rather to expose them to those viewpoints and teach them to think critically about that. That's the problem that I'm trying to solve. And you know, I would expand on that by saying that my goal is threefold with this bill. I want to foster intellectual freedom, and I think we do that by presenting students with alternatives that they can weigh and think critically about and draw their own conclusion from. My second goal would be searching for truth. And I think we put a burden now on proponents that are going to come onto a campus and espouse a viewpoint of any type and make them put forth their basic argument and their best evidence and teach students to refute those claims and think critically about them. And then, you know, I would say my overarching goal is that when we look at the goal of our institutions, we're not just producing people with an educational credential, right? I mean, the goal is to do that. Certainly, we want them credentialed to be part of the workforce, but we want them to be mature citizens. I mean, we're also producing citizens, and I think promoting virtuous citizenship is a goal that I'm trying to accomplish by teaching students how to listen, how to weigh competing claims about public good, how to ask pertinent questions, and how to deliberate and in an effort to discern the best answers for them. And that's what I'm seeking to do with the bill.
Thank you.
That's the intent and the spirit of the bill.
Thank you. Representative Tant, you are recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you. In respect to this new Office of Student Engagement, this is a twofold question. What will the requirements of those employees be? And secondly, since it's staffed and under the supervision of the Board of Governors, how will students and faculty be able to be included with those conversations with the Board of Governors under your bill?
Representative Roach, you are recognized.
Okay, so... I'll try to answer that the best that I can. So we're creating an office. There would be a satellite office at each university, and they would hire faculty or people to staff this, I guess in large part the same way they hire people to staff their administrative offices now. But if this bill passes, they could do that without requiring any kind of political litmus test or loyalty test. So I don't envision sort of creating some new sort of hiring committee or process. We're creating a new office, but just like any other office we would create at the university would go through their standard hiring procedures to staff that office or allocate faculty that are already on the administrative staff to do that or assume some of these duties. And I think that's where the fiscal may come in. It is indeterminate, like, you know, when they are building their administrative team, I don't know to what extent they're going to have to hire new people or move some people around.
Representative Tan, do you have one more question?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. In respect to the anti-Semitism question that Representative Escamani raised. If an entity is going to come on campus to espouse anti-Semitism, is there going to be a counterpoint? Are we going to require these groups to have the countering viewpoint at the table in these conversations?
Representative Roach, you're recognized.
Yeah, you know, look, I would say this about that. Again, I don't think that's a widely held political view in the United States of America. But look, if you had a university and you had 50% of the student body that said we're now Nazis and we'd like to have a Nazi speaker come onto campus, I think the requirement of this bill would require them to have another speaker with a divergent viewpoint to debate and exchange ideas and let the students formulate their opinion on that. But I would also tell you this about the bill. If you were to hire or bring in the two most extremist fringe viewpoints in the United States, and everyone can pick what that would be for themselves. Maybe it's Nazism, maybe it's something else. There's absolutely nothing that's going to compel students to attend these meetings or see these speakers. If it's something that so deeply offends you, and you want to send a signal to the university that no one supports this, and by the way, whatever you pay for this person to come here, it's not a good ROI because no one's going to show up. Nothing in this bill compels any student or any faculty member or any administrator to go and even support those views by their very attendance. So I think, you know, in the marketplace of ideas of what we're going for right now, the currency is going to be attendance, listing, and participation. So if no one simply shows up, I mean, that's to me a dead letter.
You're welcome. Welcome. Representative Escamani, you are recognized.
Thank you so much, Chairwoman. I just wanted a few follow-up questions to the point you just made. So we're asking universities to host a substantial number of events, to put their staff time, to pull faculty away from research, from teaching their students, to host an event that apparently nobody even has to go to. I just want to make sure I got that right.
Representative Roach, you're recognized.
Well, I don't think it would be the goal of any university to start out with the intention of hosting an event that no one's going to go to. But when we look at, Stanley Kurtz is someone that I read a lot in the National Review, and he's talked about this sort of culture of what he calls campus shoutdowns of speaker, where there have been big-name speakers, Candace Owens, Ben Shapiro, and others that have been invited to campus, and because you had a wide swath of the student body and the public that wanted to hear their views presented, and the detractors sort of shouted these people down. In one case, they assaulted one person, and they were unable to deliver their remarks. So, my vision for this bill, my spirit and intent is that they're going to invite speakers that are nationally or internationally well-known with a following, with a view that while wildly divergent, maybe mainstream, sort of hot and button speakers that are controversial. I want to be very clear. This bill is not an attempt to shy away from controversy. Look, if you cannot be exposed to controversial ideas on a college campus, which is the citadel of free speech in the United States, there's no better place in public life to be exposed to these controversial ideas, learn how to vet them, learn how to think about them, learn how to defeat them with political rhetoric, common sense, and logic, versus going out into the street, being exposed to something that's so foreign to you, and this resulting in some kind of political violence, which is what I think we're seeing today in this climate. And a long-winded answer to your question, but look, I'm not proposing a bill with the idea that a university is going to be mandated to bring someone that no one's ever heard of and no one wants to attend or hear speak. And I don't think a university would want to do that.
Representative Escamani, for a follow-up, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Chairwoman. Is there a cap to how much they can per diem reimburse a speaker if they don't have someone within the university community?
You're recognized.
There's no cap in the bill, and I guess I would be opposed to putting a cap in the bill. I tried that cap bill a couple years ago. It didn't work out too well. But look, I think this is not saying that universities don't have to engage in fiscal sanity the same way they do now. I mean, universities now bring in speakers, they bring in visiting faculty members. I mean, they're capable of managing their budget, and if they need more money, they're certainly going to ask us for it.
Thank you. No follow-up? You're recognized, Representative Escamani.
Thank you, Chairwoman. So HB7, the 2022 quote Stop Woke Act, banned universities from subjecting any student to training or instruction, specifically on concepts like privilege or sexism, unless given in an objective manner without endorsement of the concepts. And so I'm curious, how does your bill intersect with that?
Representative Roach, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So look, I'm going to answer that question very simply. When you look at this 11-page bill, and I'm going to be very clear about this, there's nothing suggested in this bill, there's no language in this bill, there's nothing intimated in this bill that interferes with the conduct of professors in the classroom. So any discussion about a lecture or curriculum content that's happening in a classroom, this bill does not touch anything that's happening in any of our university systems or state colleges in the classroom.
One more question, Representative Escamani, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairwoman. For the Florida Student Association component of it, I'm curious, did you work with anyone at FSA to craft that language of the bill?
Representative Roach, you're recognized.
Thank you. And you asked the chair, through the chair, what was the question? Did I work with anyone from where?
You're recognized.
Thank you, the FSA, the Florida Student Association.
I did not.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hinson, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ranking Member Tant asked the question about how do we select people for this office. I think you said it would be done according to the current hiring practices.
Is that a question?
Yes.
Okay, Representative Roach.
Yeah, look. Let me say this. I think that it's not the scope or purview of this body, of this legislative body, to get into sort of individual nitty-gritty hiring of each and every person at a university in any respect. That's not our role as a state legislature. Our role is to put up guideposts, lane markers, and sort of traffic signals to clearly define the spirit and intent of Florida institutions. And I think the bill does that. But this bill does not, and I don't think it should, get into putting out a super stringent 800-page bill of criteria on who you're going to hire. If we're going to do that, we might as well all be university presidents and do that themselves. That's the reason we have the presidents there. They have a faculty, they have administrators, and they have a provost to do that.
You have a follow-up?
Yes. Thank you.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I commend the words coming out of your mouth about viewpoint diversity, intellectual freedom, and some of the other critical thinking skills. I hope you mean that. However, I'd like to ask you about woke ideology. Suppose someone wants to bring a speaker who want to talk about woke. How would that be managed with this office?
So as the chair, I would like to remind everyone to please ask questions that are not duplicative. I feel that a lot of these questions are very redundant and similar in question, but I will
thank you.
Ask Representative Roach, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And through the chair, you're asking me, about someone who wanted to talk about sort of woke ideology on campus. I mean, my first reply would say that's just another day on campus. but I would, if we're getting into sort of the spirit of what this office is trying to do, I would like to call you to, lines 84 through 91 of the bill on page 4. And this includes some prefatory language about this office that we're trying to set up. And this I think perfectly encapsulate what the spirit of the bill is. It says, the legislature finds that the advancement of knowledge is the fundamental purpose of the state university system, and that such advancement is facilitated by the fearless sifting and winnowing of a wide diversity of views, and that the open discussion and debate of contested public policy issues from diverse perspectives provides essential preparation for mature citizenship and informed exercise of the right to vote. That is the spirit of the bill, and what we're trying to do with this office is perfectly encapsulated in that prefatory language on those lines.
Thank you, Representative Roach. Representative Henson, did you have a follow-up?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Dunkley, you are recognized, followed by Representative Escamani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rep. Roach, I wanted to ask, and if you could help me to understand, since this office is going to be created and they're going to be hiring, will this be included as part of university's budget, or is there an appropriation that we expect to see from here?
Representative Roach, I believe you've been asked that question, but if you wouldn't mind indulging, and please, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question. So if you look at the staff analysis, it does list us that there's an indeterminate fiscal impact, and not trying to be curt, but it's indeterminate. We don't know to what extent they will have to hire new faculty or simply transfer some faculty around, or maybe this could be even a collateral duty. I don't know how they're going to set that up. And again, I go back to I don't know that I want to get into the business of telling them exactly how to do it. I want to give them the broad theme, the spirit of what we're trying to accomplish, and let them go forth and create. But I have no doubt, that if they require further funding, we're going to hear about it.
Representative Dunkley, did you have a follow-up?
I just have another question.
You're recognized.
And I'm sorry, Madam Chair, but I'm just trying to learn right here. On line 228, regarding the Florida Student Association, can you tell me what is the current structure of the association? I know we've laid out the boards and all how they're going to be the student body presidents and the different positions, but what is the current one? Just educate me. Thank you.
Representative Roach, you're recognized.
I'm going to turn to the staff analysis because I thought that they did a good job of laying this out. So if you look at page 10, and I'm not going to really dive too much into it because you can read it, but it talks about you know, the fact that student governments are really a creation of state statute, and that, you know, Florida law has created a student government. It talks about that, and then it talks about the role of the Florida Student Association as a nonprofit entity established to advocate on behalf of students. And the FSA itself is a little bit different than simply a university government, in that it consists of 12 university student body presidents, and they serve as a student member of the BOG. And then in addition to that, the FSA nominates a student to serve on a financial aid appeals committee. And then there's a long list over almost two pages about how that organization is set up. But I can tell you, and I don't want to go on too long, I mean, what we're simply trying to do is 2 years ago, we put into place some due process provisions for members of student government after a prominent case here in Florida of a young man who was removed, I think, from his student senate or student president position for what he felt like were discriminatory reasons, filed a lawsuit. One was reinstated and awarded some compensation. And at that point in time, we saw the need as a legislature to extend due process provisions to members of student government on campus. What we omitted to do was to extend those same protections to student members of the FSA. That was an omission, and what we're doing here seeks to correct that omission. We're not doing anything new. We're simply extending and expanding the due process provisions that are already enshrined in law for members of student body governments to those student members of the FSA. That's what we're trying to do.
Representative Dunkley, okay. No further question. Representative Eskamani, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have one last question. I've been doing a lot of reading about accreditation and just that process. And so one of the principles of accreditation is accreditation expects an institution to develop a balanced governing structure designed to promote institutional integrity, autonomy, and flexibility of operation. So my question for you is, how do you think this mandate out of your bill affects accreditation, the sense of institutional autonomy and flexibility of operation?
Representative Roach, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think it's going to affect accreditation whatsoever, and I don't envision that happening, how that would happen and what that would look like or why. You know, and in terms of flexibility, I mean, as some of these questions have highlighted, we're giving them a lot of flexibility. They can hire who they want. They can create the office how they want, and we're not even putting a cap on how much money they can spend. I mean, to me, that's pretty flexible. But I don't see anything in here that's going to jeopardize the accreditation of a Florida university.
Representative Eskamani, did you have a follow-up? Thank you. Okay. Seeing no further questions, we will now move into public testimony. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak on the bill? We have an appearance card from Kara Gross with the American Civil Liberties Union of Florida, and she waves in opposition. We have Amanda Prater from Opportunity Solutions Project. She waves in support. Debate, members. Are there any members that wish to debate the bill? Representative Hinson, you are recognized for debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I honestly don't know what to say because the bill sounds so contrary to some of the viewpoint diversity bills that have been passed in the past of my tenure here. I'm having trouble believing what you say because I see what you do. James Baldwin said that. I'm having trouble believing what you say because I see what you do. Because of that, I'm going to be opposed to this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hinson. Representative Tant, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know I love you, Spence, and I appreciate everything you bring to the process. I have grave concerns about this bill. I haven't heard from the FSAs. I am also very concerned about the lack of definition about what some of these terms actually mean and how the impacts of it will be, and finally, the fiscal impact. I'm going to be a no on the bill, and we'll continue to work with you as we go on through the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tant. Representative Eskamani, you are recognized for debate.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and I'm really honored to serve in this committee, especially in these really just tumultuous times, because many folks know that I have a great deal of love and affection for all of our universities, in particular as a UCF graduate and now PhD student. I feel personally impacted because not only have I just grown so much in the university system, but I'm still a student and I'm on my pathway to finish this program. And so when I sit here and hear these types of bills, I carry the perspective not just as a lawmaker, but also as alumni and student. And so the notion that, for example, you do not speak to FSA while you're crafting a bill that impacts FSA, that is a red flag. And I really would encourage you as this bill progresses to talk to FSA. The notion that the BOG, which is a collection of political appointments, also gets to dictate, you know, what an equivalent is to FSA if for some reason they feel like the current structure isn't working, is also problematic, especially doing so without student engagement. And I just want to stress that, you know, I understand that there is a disconnect between what's happening on our college campuses. And I really do encourage folks, if you haven't visited, you know, one of our college campuses, you will see a great deal of diversity. I mean, when I went to UCF, I had professors where you didn't know their political affiliation, and then I had professors that was clear they were more conservative compared to those that are more open-minded towards liberal practices and perspectives. But it was always a class of debate, and I get really frustrated when we hear assumptions made and, you know, points thrown around. They're not based in any real evidence what's happening in our state university systems. I mean, look at New College as an example. Those kids were tasked to read literature by Karl Marx, just like how they read Adam Smith and Wealth of Nations. And they get to decide, you know, what makes the most sense. My UCF microeconomics professor assigned us a textbook written by one of George Bush's chief economists. And I loved that textbook. I not only kept it, but I bought the macro version of it because I found it to be really impactful and useful to my work as an academic and, of course, now today as a professional. And so as far as I'm concerned, college campuses have more freedom of speech than what's happening in this Capitol at times. And so we should keep it that way, not put mandates into place that could potentially not only invite fringe speakers, but then publicly subsidize them to speak. And so we need to be really, really careful about this, members, especially since the survey device that we passed one, two sessions ago was not even well utilized, which, by the way, tells me that there is not a problem to solve. The fact that students did not fill out that diversity survey, you can blame it to timelines all you want, but at the end of the day, if there was an outrage and alarm and a call to help on diversity issues, that survey would have been shared widely on social media, would have been filled out, people would have engaged on it, but it's not a real problem. And I really want to encourage us to focus on substantial issues facing higher education, not continue on this path of indoctrination and trying to draw approaches or phrases or talking points that hurt the institutions that we care so deeply about. And so with that, members, I really encourage you to vote down this bill, vote up for academic freedom, honor the work happening at universities. And if you haven't attended, you know, panels hosted on college campuses today, I think you would be really happy to see speakers of diverse backgrounds. In fact, I can speak to many experiences at UCF of sitting in on folks that, you know, maybe I would not agree with politically, but just to share space was insightful. So that already takes place. And there's no reason for big government to come in and mandate that. Thank you, Chairwoman.
Thank you, Representative Escamani. Representative Roach, you are recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, colleagues, for the spirited debate and questions. I'm going to try to be brief in my close. I just want to touch on a couple of points. I mean, you know, when we say that there's not a problem, I do believe that there is a problem. I do believe that there's a monoculture on campus, and I think some of the things that have contributed to that is tenure, which I think perpetuates sort of a narrow intellectual status quo. I think we have this culture of risk-averse administrators on campus that they want to prefer sort of campus tranquility, even at the cost of avoiding even the most basic normal debates. And I think that we've seen that in all cases, not in all cases, the trustees are willing to do this. I think this is an appropriate role for the legislature. And then again, going back to, you know, the problem, I mean, I think it's well documented and well researched that some of these things are happening. And I first started paying attention to this back in 2018 with an op-ed by Heather McDonald, which you can find. It was in the LA Times about UCLA hiring sort of these litmus tests, these political loyalty oaths they were requiring people to take. One of the thought leaders in this has been George Lanoe. He's a professor of political science and public policy at the University of Maryland. He has a book that's coming out soon on this. I've been reading a lot of his work. Mitchell Langbert's Homogenous, the Political Affiliation of Elite Liberal Arts College Faculty, Dave Randall's Making Citizens, and Andrew Gillen, who looked at political litmus tests. around the country. So I think there's a substantial body of literature about these problems on college campuses, including the book, The Coddling of the American Mind by, I think, Jonathan Haidt from FIRE is something I would encourage you all to read. But I think it's appropriate. And again, the goal and spirit of the bill is that our universities should not only be charged with issuing an educational credential to our young men and women who are going to be steering this great ship of state into the future, but we're also producing citizens, and we want them to be virtuous citizens. We want them to be exposed to the issues of the day, not shield them from them, and learn how to think critically about the ideas of the day to defend or rebut them. Thank you, Madam Chair, for your indulgence and for the time today and for hearing the bill.
Thank you, Representative Roach. Members, Representative Roach, having closed, yes. Kendall, please call the roll and announce the vote.
Representatives Amnesty.
Yes.
Bell.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Burfield.
Yes.
Cross.
No.
Dunkley.
No.
Escamani.
No.
Esposito.
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman.
Yes.
Hawkins.
Yes.
Hinson.
No.
Lopez. Placencia.
Yes.
Redmond.
Yes.
Schoaf.
Yes.
Tant.
No.
Temple.
Yes.
And Chair Mello.
Yes. By your vote, HB 931 is reported favorably. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members, we will now take up PCS for HB 679 relating to agreements of state colleges and state universities with foreign entities. Representative Kennedy, you are recognized to explain the PCS.
Thank you, Chair Mello and committee members. This bill addresses partnerships and agreements that many of our state colleges and universities have with the seven foreign countries of concern: Iran, Russia, North Korea, Cuba, Venezuela, and Syria, and especially China. Not all collaboration entails security risks, but common sense dictates that America's top research institutions, many of which are located in Florida, must not have ties to those Chinese universities that support the Chinese Communist Party's military-civil fusion strategy designed to obtain military know-how and next-generation innovation. This bill requires Florida State universities and colleges to publicly disclose their partnerships with entities associated with foreign countries of concern. It authorizes the Board of Education, the Board of Governors, to properly vet grants and agreements, and provides an on-ramp for those programs if and when they are determined to be in the best interest of students and not detrimental to the security of the United States. It provides enforcement mechanism and prohibits all gifts to be given or accepted between those countries of concern and any educational institution. And this, members, is the proposed committee substitute for HB 679.
Members, are there any questions on the PCS? Representative Escamani, you are recognized.
Thank you so much, Chairwoman, and thank you so much, Representative. I'm curious, how would the BOG define valuable agreements or partnerships? And looking at lines 102 to 106, where the BOG is given that authority. And I'm just curious, like, what factors would they consider if that partnership or agreement is deemed valuable to proceed?
Representative Kennedy, we are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that question. I'm a 20-year educator, and I think common sense dictates that those opportunities that are valuable for students are those that further their education, that provide the kind of enrichment and opportunities that create success for them and for our state. And so the Board of Governors would make those determinations inside of that framework.
Representative Escamani, did you have a follow-up?
I do, Chairwoman.
You're recognized.
Thank you so much. Does the BOG have a staff they refer to? Like, are there staff experts on BOG that have perspective on, like, these countries of concern? I'm just kind of curious what that process is currently like, or is it being created from scratch?
Representative Kennedy, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that question. Representative Escamani, those are great questions, and those are the sorts of things that highlight why this bill is so important, because those are not conversations that are currently happening, and they very much need to happen. And so those are the sorts of things that that we need to develop moving forward.
Follow up, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairwoman. So many folks know that my family is actually Iranian, and for many students in Iran, their path out of that country is through student visas, and their goal is to escape the oppressive regime, to come learn and contribute to a country of freedom like ours. And so I'm just curious, how does your bill intersect with whether it's welcoming international students that, you know, want to contribute to our economy and to our research, to our workforce, alongside like study abroad programs where we get to share, you know, American values with the students of these other countries with the hope of, you know, helping a grassroots shift. So I'm curious if you can talk about those intersections.
Representative Kennedy, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that question. Representative Eskamani, I agree with you that those types of partnerships are critically important. And I think that as we look toward the future, it is important to protect those opportunities inside a framework that is mindful of how important also it is to protect the security of the United States. And so I agree with you that that those types of opportunities are significant, both for students from Iran as well as those of us in the United States who benefit from understanding other cultures.
Thank you, Representative Eskamani. Representative Amnesty, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chairwoman. Thank you, Representative Kennedy, for this amazing bill. It's very important to secure our national security, specifically against the China regime. However, I'm a little concerned about the Mutual Educational and Cultural Exchange Act from 1961 with the U.S. Department of State, which pretty much promotes articulation agreements specifically for institutions to promote learning a language of national security, such as Russian, Persian, Urdu, Arabic, and so forth. Can you please explain how this bill does not affect these programs? Because we do need the CIA, NSA, State Department to have students to go to these countries, specifically Russia, the Middle East, to learn these languages of national security for our best interest. So I understand the importance of this bill, but can you please explain how this does not affect current partnerships that the State Department, CIA, NSA needs to expand our national security and best interest?
Representative Kennedy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that question. And Representative Amnesty, I appreciate the conversations that we've had about this over a number of days. The bill specifically creates an on-ramp. It creates an on-ramp for the types of relationships that you are describing, and I'll actually be presenting an amendment here shortly that clarifies that the on-ramp applies to exactly the types of things that you are describing. The bill does not end existing partnerships or agreements. It simply provides some guardrails to ensure that when we engage with countries of concern, we do it in such a way that is in the best interest of our country and provides some eyes on to make sure that we are not putting ourselves and putting the future of our country in jeopardy.
Did you have a follow-up? You are recognized.
So this bill would not affect Floridian students to participate in the Bourne, the Fulbright, the Gilman Scholarship Program with the Bureau of Education and Cultural Affairs?
Representative Kennedy, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that question. I do not believe that there is anything in this bill that would preclude those good programs.
Representative Cross, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Rep. Kennedy. My question is there going to be any procedure for students who are currently studying at some of our academic institutions if they are on this list of foreign countries of concern?
Representative Kennedy, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that question. This bill does not impact anything that is currently taking place. It has a start date of July 1, 2023, and we're looking at future partnerships. The most important thing about this bill is that it allows us to have an understanding of what is actually taking place in our universities. And I think we would all be surprised by what is happening now. And so the purpose of the bill is to provide clear disclosure of the types of partnerships that are happening, to have an understanding of what we're currently doing, and to provide some guardrails for the future. But the bill does not have impact on those things that are currently taking place.
Members, I would like to also let you know that we do have an amendment. So if we could just stick to questions on the PCS currently. Representative Eskamani, did you have a question? You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just looking at the bill real quick, I'm curious for my interpretation just to be to ask a question on it. So lines 153 to 156, is there any concern that this could intersect with maybe a university or college contracting to purchase items? And I say that because, you know, unfortunately our economy is still very reliant, for example, on like products made in China. And so I'm curious, it does explicitly say state university or state college, and any university, college, or entity. And I'm like, what do you mean by entity? Does it have to just be an educational entity? I'm just making sure there's not unintended consequence of folks who might purchase, you know, have a large contract. I'm not sure why they would, but I'm curious, is the intent for it just to be educationally focused, or could this also potentially lead to other types of contracts? And if so, that is what it is. I'm curious how you interpret the word entity.
Representative Eskamani, line 153 of the PCS, are you sure that's the reference?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Chairwoman. It might be the bill that I'm looking at. But just the notion of entity, and I can wait till, you know, the PCS, that's preferred.
Representative Kennedy, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that question. There's no intent in the bill to preclude the purchase of goods from China. If that were the case, we would all have trouble with Amazon, I'm afraid. I wish that wasn't the case, but I think it is. So there's no intent in the bill to prohibit the purchase of necessary equipment, for example. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Eskamani. Representative Tant, did you have a question?
Yes, real quick. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for talking with me about the bill in advance. I appreciate that. Quick question. I really just had a question about one of your comments about you think we'd be surprised at what we'd see. So can you shed some light on what you think we're going to see and what we'd be surprised by?
Representative Kennedy, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that question. I got interested in this issue some time ago, and you know, we addressed Confucius Institutes in the last session. And so I became curious about what other types of partnerships and agreements may be taking place in state universities. And what I found was that the Confucius Institute restrictions that we did in the last legislative session addressed the cultural exchange, what might be called low risk, but it did not address those partnerships with institutes that are considered much higher risk. For example, those institutes that are engaged in things like the development of, for example, nuclear warheads, the development of cyber espionage technology. And I do not believe that there's any intent on the part of our state universities to be engaged with institutions that are involved in those types of things. But unfortunately, that's the reality. And so this bill seeks to gain a clear understanding of exactly what we're doing. Because again, let me be clear, I do not believe it's intentional on the part of any of our state institutions, but it does in fact exist. And I'd be very happy to share with you all of the data with anyone who's interested.
Any further question? Okay. Thank you, Representative Tant. There is one amendment. Representative Kennedy, you are recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Consistent with the bill's original intent, the amendment clarifies that partnerships, which the PCS defines as faculty or student exchange programs, study abroad programs, articulation programs, recruiting programs, and dual degree programs, will be treated the same as agreements. This means that a state university or state college must receive approval from the State Board of Education or the Board of Governors, and the partnership or agreement must be deemed to be valuable to students. That's that piece we were speaking about earlier. And the state university or state college, and not detrimental to the safety or security of the United States or United States residents. Without this agreement, to your point, Representative Amnesty, partnerships, including articulation agreements, are prohibited. This was due to a drafting error and is not the intent of the bill. And this is the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Kennedy. Members, are there any questions on the amendment? Okay, seeing no questions, we will now move into public testimony on the amendment. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak on the amendment? We have no appearance cards. Members, we are now in debate on the amendment. Is there any debate on the amendment? Representative Escamani, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing forth this bill. And I think the concerns of national security are something that we all share with you and agree with you on. My only advice as it moves forward is to kind of echo some of the words made by my fellow Orange County colleague of just ensuring that there's not unintended consequences. My dad came to this country on a student visa from Iran, and I would not have the chance to be born in this great country if it wasn't for him making that journey, taking that risk, same for my mom. And so I want to make sure we're not like unintentionally making it harder for these students to essentially like escape, you know, very difficult political climates and oppressive governments to seek freedom to, and maybe one day be able to go back to those countries, you know, in a democratic state, at least that's what we wish for. And so to be thoughtful to that, and if there's ways to tighten the language to ensure it doesn't have those consequences, I feel like there would be bipartisan support for that. And so thank you for bringing forth this bill, and I'll be supporting it today.
Okay, seeing no further members wishing to debate on the amendment, Representative Kennedy, you are recognized to close on the amendment.
Wave close, thank you.
Thank you. All those in favor of adoption of the amendment signify by saying yay.
Yay.
All those opposed, nay. Members, by your vote, the amendment is adopted. We are back on the PCS as amended. We will move now into public testimony. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak on the PCS as amended? Okay, seeing no one. Debate. Are there any members that wish to debate the PCS as amended? Okay, seeing no hands. Representative Kennedy, you apparently having closed. Kendall, will you please call the roll and announce the vote?
Representatives Amnesty.
Yes.
Bell.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Burfield.
Yes.
Cross.
Yes.
Dunkley.
Yes.
Escamani.
Yes.
Esposito.
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman.
Yes.
Hinson.
Yes.
Hawkins.
Yes.
Placencia.
Yes.
Rudman.
Yes.
Schoaf.
Yes.
Tant.
Yes.
Temple.
Yes.
And Chair Mello.
Yes. By your vote, PCS for HB 679 is reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Kennedy. We will now take up HB 257 relating to the Higher Educational Facilities Financing Authority. Representative Baker, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. HB 257 is a cleanup bill that allows the Higher Educational Facilities Financing Authority, also referred to as HEFA, to operate more efficiently, which will ultimately benefit the ICUF schools who access the tax-exempt bond market through the authority. The bill clarifies that HEFA serves a public purpose. It clears up ambiguities regarding the appointment of HEFA board members, allowing each new appointment to serve a full 5-year term, allows HEFA board meetings to be conducted via Zoom, allows HEFA to contract out services to assist with administrative matters, confirms the time of which HEFA will determine the financial responsibility of an applicant school, and extends the time HEFA must file its annual audit from 2 to 6 months after the end of the fiscal year. That is the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Okay, I think we're all getting tired. We will now move into public testimony. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak on the bill? We have Bob Boyd from ICUF, and Bob, you are recognized.
Madam Chair, thank you. Very briefly, Bob Boyd representing the Independent Colleges and Universities of Florida. We just want to thank Representative Baker for doing this bill for us. On behalf of our 175,000 students, this allows us to access this private debt and be more efficient doing it. I just want to point out that HEFA does not use any state revenue. This does not impact the state of Florida's bond rating. This is private debt. We've issued over $1.4 billion of bonds since HEFA started in 2001 and have had no defaults. And this is a great way for our schools to access this market and help expand our capacity to students. So we wanted to thank Representative Baker and appreciate you letting me say some words. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Boyd. Debate. Are there any members that wish to debate the bill? Seeing none, Representative Baker, you are recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll waive close.
Representative Baker, having closed, Kendall, please call the roll and announce the vote.
Representatives Amnesty.
Yes.
Bell.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Burfield.
Yes.
Cross.
Yes.
Dunkley.
Yes.
Escamani.
Yes.
Esposito.
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman.
Yes.
Hawkins.
Yes.
Hinson.
Yes.
Plasencia.
Yes.
Rudman.
Yes.
Schoaf.
Yes.
Tant.
Yes.
Temple.
Yes.
And Chair Mello.
Yes. By your vote, HB 257 is reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Baker. We will now take up HB 517 related to nursing education for military combat medics. Representative Rudman, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Chair Mello, Vice Chair Beltran, Ranking Member Tant, and my fellow members of the committee. It is my pleasure to present my second bill, House Bill 517, second bill, the Pathway for Military Combat Medics Act. This bill would create a standardized and uniform protocol for military medics who wish to enter nursing school to receive course credit or credit hours for the training that they have already received. It would require the Articulation Coordinating Committee to determine a process by which to award credit and establish a list of course equivalencies and clock hours for combat medic courses and training. Once approved by the Board of Governors as well as the State Board of Education, all public state universities, the Florida College System, and institutions and career centers would award credit hours or course credit based upon the approved list. In addition, the bill revises a primary goal of the Florida Center of Nursing to require its statewide plan for nursing manpower to include coordination with hospitals that provide opportunities for nursing students to gain clinical experience. That is the bill.
Members, having a military combat veteran at home, I would never encourage anyone who may have missed Representative Rudman's first bill presentation to consider some, you know, difficult questions. But at this time, members, are there any questions on the bill? Oh, you dodged a bullet. Ha, no pun intended. Okay, we will move now into public testimony. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak on the bill? We have Kevin Brown from Northwest Florida State College. Okay, it looks like, Kevin, you wave in support. Thank you. David Micah Jr. from the Florida Hospital Association is here and waves in support. Tay Carmichael from Florida Association of Nurse Anesthesiologists and doing business as Florida Association of Nurse Anesthesiology. She waves in support. We have Bob, and I know, Bob, I'm going to mispronounce your last name, Estalos. Thank you, ranking member, for saving my, you know what, from the Florida Department of Veteran Affairs. You wave in support. Thank you very much. Rachel, here's another difficult one. Whitbrocht. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, we have one more. Christopher Stanberg, Americans for Prosperity, waving in support. Thank you, everyone. Okay, we move on to debate. Are there any members that wish to debate the bill? Representative Cross, you are recognized, followed by Representative Escamani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Redmond, just want to commend you on this great, great bill. At our last meeting, we saw a presentation by USF's College of Nursing and their innovative program, Veteran to Bachelor of Science in Nursing. This is the type of thing that we need to be doing and making sure that we are honoring our veterans and getting them into these places where we need more people in the workforce. So thank you for bringing this bill forward, and I look forward to voting yes.
Thank you, Representative Cross. Representative Escamani, you are recognized.
Thank you so much, Chair Mello. I just want to echo that. And, last session, I had the joy of serving on regulatory reform, and we often talk about some of our priorities when it comes to just workforce and certification is to help make it easier for different groups of people to have that path forward, including our veterans, alongside folks who are immigrants, folks who are returning citizens. So I think anything we can do to help ensure employment is great, but then, of course, the need is so dire. So thank you for leading the charge in that effort.
Thank you, Representative Escamani. Representative Hinson, you are recognized for debate.
Ditto.
Why, thank you, Representative Hinson. That was great debate. Representative Redmond, you are recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, at a time when Florida is experiencing a nursing shortage, this bill addresses that shortage while also doing right by our military. We have the answer right here in our midst. Florida is the most military-friendly state in the country. In my part of Florida, we are blessed to be home to the Duke Field 7th Special Forces, Hurlburt Field, Eglin Air Force Base, Whiting Field, and Pensacola Naval Air Station. There are literally hundreds of talented military medics that would benefit from this bill, and this bill will essentially put them on a faster track to join our workforce quicker. I have seen these medics in action. I've employed a couple of them. I have worked with several of them. I can assure you their skills are formidable. As a physician, I will even admit to you that if you were in certain traumatic cases, like a really bad car wreck, you would rather have these medics there than have me there. And so that's how experienced they are. So I can think of no finer way to show our respect than by allowing our heroes, who have proven themselves time and time again on the front lines of Afghanistan and Syria, let's allow them to come home and serve on the front lines of America's healthcare system where they're truly needed. With that, I close. Thank you.
Representative Redmond, having closed, Kendall, please call the roll and announce the vote.
Representatives Amnesty.
Yes.
Bell.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Burfield.
Hoorah, yes.
Cross.
Yes.
Dunkley.
Yes.
Escamani.
Yes.
Esposito.
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman.
Yes.
Hawkins.
Yes.
Hinson.
Yes.
Placencia.
Yes.
Redmond. Schoaf.
Yes.
Yes.
Tant.
Yes.
Temple.
Yes.
And Chair Mello.
Yes. By your vote, HB 517 is reportedly favorably reported. Yeah, something like that. Thank you very much,
thank
Representative
you,
Redmond. Hua. Congratulations. Okay, members, thank you very much. We got through all of our bills on the agenda today. I loved the spirited debate. I think I feel like I have to. We're left leaning over here literally today. So I'm just going to look to the left. Thank you all very much today. And, you know, I love the spirited debate. I just ask that we definitely be respectful to one another with opposing views. But they're very much accepted here in this committee. So thank you all today. And happy first day of session, everybody. That being said, members, that concludes today's agenda. And seeing no further business, Representative Redmond moves we rise. Meeting adjourned.